Yes, I think he needs to ride shotgun on this one for you. All right, thank you. With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 622. And actually, because we have so many people here from far away, over 100 miles, what I'd like to do is open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 676, and then we will do the work sessions because it's mostly agency and people that I see in the audience that are often in this building. And I think that as a courtesy, we will make sure that people came far away are heard first. So with that, we will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 676. Beth, if you can provide us with an overview.
Senate Bill 676 authorizes the production, possession, and commerce in industrial hemp commodities and products, identifies that industrial hemp is an agricultural product that is subject to regulation by the State Department of Agriculture.
Okay, and Senator Prezonsky, since your name is on this bill, along with Senator Nelson.
Yep, Senator Nelson's here. I think he was going to.
Okay, Senator Nelson, why don't you come on up?
I'm actually going to make a phone call to
Representative Monson.
Yes.
To Monson. We have a representative, the Republican Speaker of the House in North Dakota, who's going to join us. North Dakota.
Aren't they having a bit of a problem there?
Yes.
Right now?
They're sort of underwater, but.
That's from World War II.
Yes, he's. Maybe their phones are underwater.
Hello?
Yes, hi. Is this Representative Monson?
Yes, it is. I'm going to put you on hold and put you on my speakerphone.
Uh-oh. You're on speakerphone as well, so just so you know.
Okay.
And this is Senator Jackie Dingfelder here from the Oregon Legislature.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us and welcome.
Yes.
Representative Monson is the Republican Speaker of the House in North Dakota, and we know that you're dealing with severe flooding and storms right now, so we appreciate you being with us, and our thoughts are with you. Water is a very important issue to this committee, and obviously it's something that I know you're dealing with.
Yes, we are having a bit of a problem here. We did get our ice jam broken up with about 600 pounds of explosives, and the water in the river has gone down about 3 feet now, so I think we're past the worst of it for right now.
Well, good. Well, we're glad you can join us, and we're glad you're not in a boat or you're able to be dry on land. We do have the two senators that are co-sponsoring this bill, and we've asked them to say a few comments before we hear public testimony. So we have Senator Dave Nelson here and Senator Floyd Prezonsky.
Very good.
Thank you. Okay. And then we'd like to hear your testimony, but I know you wanted to hear from the senators first.
Okay.
Who would like to go first?
Madam Chair, just for the record, since Representative Monson's on the telephone, this is Senator Floyd Prezonsky. And I just wanted to say, kind of mirror what Representative Monson will be telling us as to long haul and endeavor as trying to give our farmers here in Oregon the opportunity to have the ability to grow industrial hemp. It has a very long history and heritage, industrial hemp. Not only in this state, but many other states, including North Dakota. And in looking at the prepared remarks that Representative Monson will be sharing with us, it appears that he has been the primary sponsor, as I have, for industrial hemp in his home state of North Dakota. And he will be going over as to when it first was introduced and the trials and tribulations and why North Dakota has taken the steps that I'm asking Oregon to do, and why I would say at this point it is imperative for us to move sooner than later, because there is going to be, I believe, a recognition on the part of the federal government to open up what has been in the past a legal crop that would allow farmers in this state to have the opportunity, if they chose to, use it in their production and as a rotation crop. As I said, a very long history. We have a number of individuals that are here that have different expertise regarding the use of industrial hemp. What I can tell the committee at this point, in the state of Oregon, as well as throughout the United States, it is illegal for farmers to grow industrial hemp unless they go through a very rigid process that DEA has to sign off on. And at the same time, we can have manufacturers and production individuals import as much industrial hemp as they can and they desire to from any other countries. And I believe Representative Monson will share his experiences as to what's happened to the north of them in Canada. So with that, I'm going to turn over the microphone to, to Senator Nelson and let him make his statements, who is a co-chief sponsor in this year's effort. And then we'll honor to hear from the Speaker of the House of North Dakota.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Przanski. And Representative Monson, I just want to make sure, can you hear us okay?
Very good.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Senator Nelson, welcome.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee, and honorable representative from North Dakota. My name is David Nelson, I'm a state senator from District 29, which is northeast Oregon. I'm a dryland farmer, but my district has dryland and irrigated farmer both, and so I would have to declare a conflict of interest because I potentially could grow this crop at some particular time. And that's really my interest, just to give farmers another opportunity, another option. In our part of the country, dryland farms are getting bigger and bigger. The irrigated farms are getting bigger and bigger, and small farms like my son and I operate are trying to find niches and so that we can survive. And so that's my interest in this bill, and I'm looking forward to listening to the representative from North Dakota talk about his experience on the ground raising this crop. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And with that, Representative Monson, why don't you go ahead? We're delighted you can join us.
Okay, thank you, Representative Senator Dean Calder, is it?
That's it, you got it right.
Okay, for the record, I'm State Representative David Monson from District 10 in northeastern North Dakota, and I am the Speaker of the House here. I'm a Republican. I've been in the legislature since 1992. And I believe you have my written testimony, and I'm not going to bore you with reading it. I guess I'll just hit a few of the highlights. In North Dakota, we have a citizen legislature that meets every 2 years for a maximum of 80 days.
Whoa.
So we're under a real time crunch here in North Dakota when we get into session. And obviously, we are not full-time legislators, so in my real life, throughout my whole career, I've been a school administrator, and I've been a farmer since 1975 with my dad, who passed away recently, but we have been working on this project for industrial hemp since 1997. That was the first legislative session that I introduced a bill. And we have passed every bill that we've ever put in. We've been tweaking it every year since 1997. And your bill looks very, very comprehensive. I think you're going to catch up to what we have done in North Dakota in almost one fell swoop if this bill were to go into law. It looks very, very good to me. I believe you've been told, or you can read in my testimony, that we are in the middle of a lawsuit against the DEA. Another farmer and I have had North Dakota licenses issued by our Ag Commissioner, Roger Johnson. He is a Democrat, and he has been working very hard with us all the time that we've been working on the whole issue. We've made many trips to other states and to Washington, D.C., and we are currently without Roger because he was just elected to the position of the National Farmers Union president. So we are looking at a new ag commissioner being appointed shortly, and I would think that we're going to have a pretty good relationship with him, too, as far as the industrial hemp issue goes. We've had great bipartisan support. We've had very large margins when we pass our bills. They all pass with 75% to 85% of the people in both houses voting for them. And it's an issue, I guess, of states' rights, but it's also very important to us agriculturally because we have been, especially in my corner of the state, very wet for many years, and we have a disease called Fusarium head blight in our wheat and barley, and we call it scab, and it has let up a little bit. We found some fungicides that we can use to help control it somewhat in some years. But it's very important that we find some other crops that we can rotate in to try to break our disease cycle. And we have great hopes for industrial hemp because they're raising it just 25 miles away from me up in Canada. They've been raising it since 1997. And they've had growing pains with it. It's not the easiest crop to harvest. It's very tall, very strong fibers, and it's got some challenges. But they have worked through that, and we've learned from them. We are very hopeful that in the near future, maybe the new president here, administration, will relax the rules and regulations against industrial hemp. There are tests that can be done to show the difference between marijuana, the high THC levels, and the industrial hemp. And they're pretty simple. They're even a field test, and we just can't seem to get through to the DEA, though, that there is a difference between industrial hemp and marijuana. And their whole contention is that if it's in the same genus and species, if it's got any trace of THC whatsoever, it's marijuana, plain and simple. So I guess I'll just let you ask me some questions if you have any, and see where we go from here.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions? Senator Boquist has a question. I'll identify as they, obviously you cannot see them unless you're watching us on cable, but go ahead, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Representative. Could you expand just briefly, the issue at hand here is even once the state passes this law, then what we're doing is adding our weight so that at a future date when we need to convince the DEA or we convince the federal government, as you're well aware, the 2007 Act Ron Paul introduced to overturn the law is out there. We're really positioning ourselves so that we can get into the commercial production like our neighboring nations are right now. Is that not correct?
I would say you are 100% correct. By other states passing industrial hemp legislation, I think that will bring more pressure to bear on DEA or the administration and Congress to make the changes that are needed. And once we've got the laws in place on the books, we feel that we have an upper hand. I guess we're ready to go if that day ever comes that the DEA and Congress say, okay, go ahead. If you've got state regulations in place, we'll let you run your own show.
Follow-up question from Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Representative, just looking at this and the research that I did in preparation for the committee, could you comment on the oil value? I see that there are some minor oils, but is there a biofuels value to this crop?
Madam Chair and Senator, I would say that the value of the industrial hemp crop as an oil is probably going to be too valuable to use as a biofuel at this point. It sells for about 80 cents a pound right now, and you can use soybean or canola, which is a big crop in our area, much cheaper, and 15 cents a pound for canola probably, and it will burn just fine. So I would say that the value of industrial hemp as a biofuel is not that great using the oil. However, the biomass that can be used in an ethanol plant to make ethanol is far superior to corn or any other annual type of a crop that we can raise, like switchgrass and corn and so on.
Any other questions? Senator Przanski.
Thank you. Representative, again, thank you very much for taking time out of your day with all the, I'm going to call it, tragedies that you've been dealing with in your home state. I want to put on the record, I assume that through your research, you realized that industrial hemp was, in fact, a cash commodity crop that we've had in this country for decades, and it wasn't until, I believe, 1970-71 when the federal government took over the Controlled Substance and passed that act that basically knocked out the legitimacy of that crop. And I was wondering if you could just share with us maybe some of the discussions you had with your colleagues and maybe some of the historical perspective as to industrial hemp being used. I know that there's the Hemp for Victory campaign during World War II, having farmers to grow hemp to help with the war cause during World War II, and that there are actually commercial milling and facilities that were in existence up into at least the early 60s.
You're right on all those counts. The state of North Dakota was actually a very large industrial hemp producer through World War II, and I believe that was about the last crop that was legally raised here in North Dakota. We have a lot of volunteer industrial hemp still growing. They call it ditchweed. It grows wild in a lot of parts of the state, especially in the southeastern corner of the state. And for a long time, the DEA and our state weed boards were out there eradicating it because it was considered a noxious weed. So in one of the years that we've been working on this issue, we did take industrial hemp off the noxious weeds list. Our counties were very happy to not have to go out and spend all kinds of dollars and time trying to eradicate the volunteer industrial hemp that was still growing left over from the 40s. So now, since that has happened, they don't even bother to spray it anymore, and we're hoping that that could be a real valuable germ source for our industrial hemp in the future. You know, just to, we know it grows very well here because it's been surviving on its own for 70 years, 60 years.
Okay. Senator Nelson has a question or a comment.
Yes, thank you, Representative. Growing conditions, is it irrigated, dry land, the amount of water that you probably need, is a spring crop or a fall crop, and what it would be an average yield, say, in any of the, one of those conditions?
Okay, you were cutting in and out a little bit, but average rainfall in my corner of the state is anywhere from about 15 inches in the summer on up to about 40 inches in the summer. Anything around 20 seems to be adequate. The people up in Canada, just a few miles north of me, are almost the same amount of rainfall, and no matter how much or how little rain they get, it seems like it does very well because it's got a very good taproot. It takes about the same amount of fertilizer as wheat. It does not take any pesticides or herbicides because, as far as we know yet at this time, there are no insect pests. It grows so fast that it shades out all of the weeds. I went up to Canada and I saw on my friend's farm where they were doing some different experimenting. They planted it anywhere from 6-inch rows all the way up to 36-inch rows, I believe, at least 30-inch rows. And they had virtually no difference in the yield. They found, though, that the fiber is much finer and of a higher quality if they plant it closer together. And it doesn't grow quite as tall, and that's one of the problems with harvesting it, is because it can grow so tall that it's very tough to harvest.
What would be an average yield? Or
they've been getting about 800 to 900 pounds of seed per acre, and at 80 cents a pound, roughly, you know, it varies like every other commodity, but it seems to be pretty stable around that price. That yields them about $700 an acre gross, and then when they come in and harvest the stalks and for the fiber, then that brings their gross value, I guess, per acre somewhere around the $900, $800 to $900 range.
Thank you.
Okay. And Senator Posonski had another question.
Yeah. Representative, I just want to, I guess, get some clarification. It sounds like one of the things that you're looking at the ditchweeds that you have, that could actually be the formation of your seed bank that you would need to be able to grow. So our legislation actually would allow farmers to maintain or retain, I should say, some of the seed for the next crop for the next year. And do you find that to be important to be able to establish and maintain their ability to continue to grow by retaining some of the seed?
Well, we do have another farmer here that holds a license, and he has indicated that he wants to raise it for seed for other farmers. I am so close to Canada that I applied for a DEA license to import seed from Canada, and they have done quite a lot of research around the world. Finland has a seed that is very common now up in Canada. It's called Finola. It has pretty good characteristics with the oil. It's not nearly as tall, and I think for the most part we would be getting seed out of Canada to start with. We do have provisions, though, that we could keep it on our farms to use it ourselves, or hopefully to buy it from other people that raise the certified seed. But the ditchweed hasn't been tested, to my knowledge, as to what the level of THC is. I've been told it's quite low, but you know, that would have to be tested and verified before we could start using that, because our law says 0.3% THC or less.
All right. One last question, if I could, Madam Chair, and that's the issue of, let's say, the cousin of marijuana. There's been a lot of discussions in the past, Representative, regarding that you are going to have individuals that are going to try to maybe grow marijuana in the middle of a industrial hemp seed plantation or plot. And it's my understanding that that would be somewhat foolish for multiple reasons. One, of course, the legislation we have requires these farms to be registered and they can be inspected. And so asset forfeiture laws would actually kick in if someone was actually doing that. And then also, if you're actually growing marijuana for high THC, understand that there would be a cross-pollination that would occur with industrial hemp that would actually work against an individual who was actually trying to produce marijuana.
You're correct. I want to make sure, though, that you understand that if you were to plant a plant of marijuana in the middle of your field, that that plant is bred or has the genetics to produce a high level of THC, and it would cross-pollinate, but the actual leaves or seeds or whatever they use for the marijuana drug purposes would still be high in THC until the second generation, where the seeds from that plant would be planted and used to make the next crop. The mere planting of it in the middle of the industrial hemp field will not dilute that first plant, you know, the THC level of that plant. It's if they tried to save the seed from that and use it, then obviously it will have been cut way back in quality. I want to add, though, that Winnipeg, Manitoba, pretty large population, a million plus, and then all the suburbs around it. They had a field in 1997 of industrial hemp planted right around what they call the Perimeter Highway. And a lot of kids from Winnipeg evidently came out the first year, and they were stopping on the highway, running out into the field, and they would sniff off the leaves all summer long, and the poor field along the road looked like it had a hailstorm go through it. The next year they planted a field similar in the same vicinity. Nobody even touched it. Nobody looked close at it at all. Totally left it alone. So they found out that it had zero value as far as drugs go. I guess that pretty well answered most of your question, I hope.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you for being here. And we do have your written testimony that's been distributed to the committee.
Well, thank you very much for letting me testify, and I would have liked to have been there in person so you could actually meet me, and I could show you that I am a real person. I am not a hippie by any means. I have no ulterior motive other than strictly the production of the fiber and seed for food and for fiber uses, and I'm just an ordinary kind of guy, just like you guys.
Well, thank you very much, Representative. We certainly appreciate you taking the time out, especially during in the middle of the crisis that you're dealing with. And you're welcome to stay on if you'd like to hear the rest of the testimony.
Actually, I have you pulled up on my computer, so I will just I'll hang up the phone, and I will be here for a little while. I do have a dinner engagement in a little bit, but I'll watch on my computer, and if you do have other questions, you could call me back, or you can certainly call me back again on Monday or Tuesday, and I did give my cell phone number to you, too.
Okay, thank you very much. We really appreciate you taking the time, and we'll look forward to, if we have any follow-up questions, contacting you.
Okay, thank you very much for letting me do this.
And thank you, Senator Nelson, for coming here today. And you're welcome if you'd like to come up to the dais and hear the rest of the testimony.
I just like the concept of a hippie Republican.
There you go. Thank you.
A farmer hippie Republican.
So we have a couple of panels, and I am going to ask folks that they can limit their testimony to 3 minutes each because we still have two work sessions to do before the end of the evening. So next panel is David Siebert, Christina Volgesi, I'm hoping I got that right, and Gary Shapiro. And I'm going to hand the gavel to my trusty vice chair, and I'll be right
back. That's it. I am trusty.
I didn't say trustworthy.
All right. Thank you.
Whoever wants to
go ahead.
Okay, hi. My name is Dave Siebert, and my company is Fiber Alternatives. Please let me thank Senator Floyd Brzezinski and the committee for the opportunity to present this information, which is based on my poster entitled 21st Century Hemp Composites and Energy Applications, and an accompanying PowerPoint presentation, which will be available through Senator Brzezinski's office. It's right up there, or at the above addresses. What this poster says is that hemp grown densely up to 18 feet with no side branching or plant spacing, chopped to whole green stalk pieces, 1/4 to 1/2 inch, and dried to produce feedstock or furnish, can be made into biofuels, biochar, and building material composites. Why industrial hemp? Yield. Hemp is the only annual fiber energy source plant that produces enough material to replace the biomass currently extracted from forests and fruit-producing sources on a sustainable basis. Hemp can produce 10 to 15 tons of biomass per acre on secondary and tertiary growing areas. The composition, hemp stalks are 77% cellulose, and the lignin is soluble with hydrogen peroxide. Since our forests are the second most important carbon sinks on the planet next to the oceans, how can we hope to sequester excess carbon dioxide if we keep removing the trees from our forests? Industrial products such as biofuels and biochar have three processes that are currently being considered: distillation, biodigestion, and pyrolysis. Hemp is the best source of annually renewable ag biomass we have. Pyrolysis, which is non-oxygen combustion, currently has the most potential to produce biofuels. While infrastructure investment for pyrolysis is prohibitively expensive, the biochar side product holds tremendous potential to eliminate nutrient runoff in fields and to supplement and eventually replace organic and petroleum-based fertilizers in agriculture. Hemp for composite building materials. Hemp is as good as or superior to wood fiber in all current applications such as particle board, MDF, OSB panels, laminated veneer lumber, structural beam components, and can be produced with minor modifications in the mills as they are. It is a good reinforcement for thermoplastic resin fiberglass applications and a report on these topics entitled Bass Fiber Applications for Composites is linked to www.fibrealternatives.com website. Hemp and lime can be mixed to make a spectrum of building materials ranging from blown insulation, plasters, panels, structural members, aggregates and sealants for walls and floors, etc. These products make buildings and structures that absorb CO2 over time while creating super comfortable interior environment temperatures with walls that actually breathe. In conclusion, hemp is an ideal material for making biofuels and biochar for agriculture, to mitigate global warming and forest degradation, to stabilize the world and Oregon's economy, to revolutionize building materials, construction technologies, and costs, and to provide green-collar jobs and employment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was impressive. Thank you.
And that was said in within 3 minutes?
That was very good. We'll hear from the entire panel, and then we'll take questions. Go ahead.
Okay. Senators, and I'd like to thank Senator Przanski and Senator Nelson for sponsoring this bill. My name is Jerry Shapiro. I'm the owner of the Mary Hempsters. I'm incorporated. Been incorporated in Oregon for 12 years, and this is going to be my 16th year in business. Last year, we did about $2 million in retail sales. We are on track to do a little better this year. It's kind of flat. It's tough out there. But, you know, we have a good business model, and I believe hemp really is, I believe, holding its weight. I mean, it's shown that it works, and here I am 16 years later and, you know, presenting this before you. I you know, submitted the testimony. It's pretty clear. I'll just let you guys, you know, read it. I just want to have the opportunity to come in front of you and encourage you to pass the Senate bill. That's it.
Thank you.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me here. My name is Christina Volghese, and I'm one of the founding partners of Living Harvest Foods. We are the largest manufacturer of natural and organic hemp food products. We're Portland-based. Our product line consists of hemp milk, the first hemp milk-based ice cream, and we will have some sampling after the hearing for you all, as well as making hemp oil and hemp protein powders. All our products are made from imported Canadian-grown hemp seeds. To date, only our ice cream line is manufactured in Oregon, with the rest of our products being manufactured in Canada or out of state due to the lack of hemp seed sourcing and processing facilities in Oregon. We support hemp farming legislation in Oregon because we believe in the economic opportunities hemp farming will produce for local farmers and businesses. Since the launch of hemp milk in January of 2007, hemp foods have become one of the fastest growing trends in the natural foods industry, experiencing double-digit growth of 34% year over year. We've tripled our sales since the launch of hemp milk, and we expect to reach just under $8 million in revenue by year's end, a 60% increase versus the previous year. And to accommodate our growth, we are putting more Oregonians to work. We have expanded our infrastructure. We currently employ 14 people, and we've just moved to 3,000 square feet of office space in downtown Portland. I don't know if you've had a chance to try hemp foods before, but 15% of our national sales are driven by consumers here in the Pacific Northwest. You can find our products in Fred Meyer's, QFC, Hagen, Market of Choice, New Seasons, Whole Foods Markets, and natural food retailers like Life Source and First Alternative here in Salem. And by year's end, we will be available in Winco, C&K Markets, and pretty much every local grocery chain in the state. And due largely to our success, we are now seeing established food manufacturers adding hemp to their portfolio products. Companies such as Bob's Red Mill and Pacific Foods, both Oregon-based companies, as well as food giants such as Hain Celestial, a $1 billion food company, and Rich's, a $2.5 billion food company, now selling hemp foods. These companies, like ours, are all purchasing hemp seeds from Canadian farmers. We believe there's a huge economic opportunity, which we are realizing today, for Oregon farmers to grow hemp to support the natural products industry. Our business growth and the growth of the hemp industry is driven by consumers' recognition that hemp is a delicious and highly nutritious food source. Hemp seeds contain naturally occurring healthy omega-3 fatty acids, high-quality digestible protein, and vitamins and minerals like iron and magnesium. And importantly, hemp is also free of common allergens. It's gluten-free, soy-free, and dairy-free. Many Americans, as you know, are facing health-related issues today. and need hemp food products. The population of consumers who cannot drink soy milk or dairy is growing. It's estimated to be between 30 and 50 million. Both soy milk and dairy are actually considered top 8 allergens, according to the FDA. And the number of consumers allergic to gluten is also on the rise. So hemp food products fill this niche. Also, we're finding that consumers nationwide are voting with their dollars for natural and organic hemp foods. In conclusion, I'd like to tell you that we expect in the next 5 years to reach $100 million in revenue, all from hemp food products. And we would like Oregon farmers and businesses to be the ones who benefit alongside of us. We would like to, hemp farming, we believe, will lead to further economic development as well of local food processing and manufacturing facilities. We don't want to rely on imports any longer in foreign and out-of-state food processing. And we don't want to be forced to move our manufacturing up to Canada because of increased transportation costs and the cost of importing raw hemp seeds. So we sincerely hope the hemp farming legislation will pass in Oregon so we can localize our seed sourcing, processing, and manufacturing in the state and share our economic benefits with Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I apologize for being out of the room for a couple minutes and wanted to see if there are any questions from the panel. Okay, Senator Boquist?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got a question
for the panel. Yeah.
For Jerry or Christina. Just for the record, Madam Chair, I'm looking at the Congressional Research Service report for the Congress. Mm-hmm. It's actually dated March 23, 2007. And I'm looking at your testimony and the Canadian documentation. I did review the Hemp for War video that Senator Prozanski mentioned, in which we went from about 10 or 12,000 acres to about 75 or 80,000 acres in less than 1 or 2 years. The Congressional Research Report indicates that U.S. imports in 2006 of hemp products was about $6.3 million, and that about $1.2 million of that came from Canada. Both of you are in the industry. Can you kind of expand? I mean, it appears to me the numbers don't match and that there's actually a larger market out there. So if in a state like Oregon or North Dakota you started producing this, that the market is actually much larger. Would you comment on that?
I can make a comment on that. Hemp actually can
be... You state your name for the record, sorry, so yes. Folks who are listening. Yeah.
Christina Volgese with Living Harvest Foods. Hemp is a versatile ingredient raw material source. It can be made into a variety of products. So currently we see our growth not only in the hemp milk beverage category, ice cream, but really any food category where we can, where you see soy being used. So soy isolates as a filler in many, many different food categories. So we do see the growth of hemp food products increasing exponentially. And there is the fact that Hain Celestial and Rich's, so these are billion-dollar food companies, are starting to manufacture foods with hemp is a good indication that there is a huge economic opportunity.
Follow up?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. In your testimony, Christina, you indicated on page 2 that over a 5-year period you thought there was a $100 million revenue market.
That's for our business. So it's within reach within 5 years. We believe that we will do $100 million in revenue 5 to 6 years from now from product expansion as well as expansion of distribution into new chains, food service, conventional grocery. Right now we're in the natural food space and moving into more grocery chains like Fred Meyer's and C&K Markets and such.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Senator Prozanski.
Yeah, Jerry, and your company, you didn't really, let's say, tout what you do. I do have one of your lip balms.
So. Yeah, I thought I saw you using that. So, Jerry Shapiro, Mary Hempsters, we produce a hemp oil-based lip balms, medicinal salves. We also started a new line of products called Sacred Earth Botanicals, which we've been focusing on spas and massage schools, and it's really starting to take off. It's not so much hemp-centric, but we do use hemp in many of the products. So.
And if I could follow up.
Follow up.
And as you said, from your early days, starting with what I understood was just the lip balms, you've now expanded into these other markets. And do you also, as Christina say, see more opportunities?
Absolutely. We actually are primarily in the natural food industry. We've had a lot. I mean, we kind of have a double niche here in that we have a point of purchase product that allows us to put it just about at any counter space or out ski hills. And but the spa products, that is for us really where we see our future going. And that we're not just hemp based, but also certified organic, one of the few in the country through Oregon Tilth.
So. Great. Yes, and
I'd like to make a comment in that I was, first of all, I was directly involved in the legalization of industrial hemp in Canada. When you receive your poster, you'll see a picture of a piece of MDF here. The first license that was granted in Canada was on an experimental basis, and someone had to, it was on the provision that someone had to take the raw stock and make it into an industrial prototype. I was sent the raw stock, which we then sent to Washington State University Materials and Engineering Lab, where we made medium-density fiberboard out of it, which when was sent back to the Canadian farmer and placed into the hands of the Canadian government representative, industrial hemp became legal in Canada. And I would just point out that while there's no accounting for the history of what's happened with industrial hemp, that hemp works better or as well in all our mills that produce building materials and composites right now. How much is the amount of hundreds of millions of dollars of products that we're talking about that could be used through our mills alone and all the composites that are placed there?
Okay, thank you for that additional comment.
Just, Madam Chair, just really quickly.
Quickly, because we have a lot of people that have
spoken. I just wanted to kind of support what is happening with this hemp milk is really fantastic, and this is going to put hemp really on the map, and that should be looked at.
Great, thank you. And I will tell you, I am lactose intolerant, so I've had your product, and it's very tasty.
Great, thank you.
So thanks for coming today. It's like we'll help enlighten some of our colleagues over here. Okay, Laura Flanagan, Patrick Gogan, and Lisa Hansen, or Jim Kramer, whoever would like to come up. Okay, you can get started, please.
Hello, Madam Chairwoman and members of the committee. I am Laura England Flanagan. I am a third-generation Oregon farm woman. I recently inherited our family farm in Eugene alongside my brother. Our family farm started out in the early 50s as a commercial goat dairy, supplying goat's milk for infants. And when Terrific Formula came along in the 60s, the goats went away. And we became a timber, and we segued into becoming a timber family in the 70s. As you all know, timber prices aren't so great right now, and that pain is being felt by many of us here in Oregon. In doing research to see what we could come up with as an alternative, we took a look at hemp growing and determined that our soil and our microclimate just might be a fit out on Lorraine Highway. In doing our research, I'm hearing conservative estimates 2 seconds ago that we import close to $250 million of industrial hemp into these United States each year from China and Canada to use for a myriad of products. Not to belabor what others have just testified, but we use it everything from pharmaceuticals and our food to car doors in Detroit are made. Think of what we could do in our great state of Oregon with that kind of money if it was licensed and taxed. We need to think about the jobs we could and will create here in Oregon that would be the ultimate green jobs. I know this group knows the bullet points about industrial hemp ad nauseum. Growing industrial hemp for our family is honestly economical. I need a crop, a good rotation crop, so that I can continue to keep that family farm going, and I have 3 daughters I'd like to pass it on to so that they can make their agricultural choices for the next 30 years. As a third-generation Oregon farm woman, I thank you for your time today and urge passage of Senate Bill 676.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Patrick Goggin, I'm representing Vote Hemp. It's a national advocacy organization for the passage of industrial hemp. I'd just like to add to a few of the points that have been raised here today, specifically initially regarding law enforcement concerns. Just to clarify Representative Monson's testimony, when male hemp plants cross-pollinate with female marijuana plants, it causes the flowering tops, more commonly known as the buds, to go to seed. So while the THC content within those flowering tops may still be the same in that current crop, it'll go to seed and cause the drug element essentially to be devalued. So that's an important concept to understand. Just to reiterate, while there may have been some very small problems with in terms of law enforcement in Canada early on, it has been not an issue whatsoever. If you'll talk to unofficially talk to Royal Canadian Mounted Police, they'll tell you the same thing. With respect to the federal-state conflict, it's important to note that what we anticipate is that the initial federal policy shift will be to leave it to the states to decide what to do on this issue and to regulate it themselves. And that's why it's important today for Oregon to put in place laws that will be regulating the growth of industrial hemp, so when the policy does shift, that it'll be ready to go, just like North Dakota is doing right now. With regards to yields, Representative Monson addressed the dryland yields. It's my understanding on dryland it'd be between 800 and 900 pounds per acre, and we're looking at under irrigation, which a lot of the state is under irrigation, 1,200 to 1,500 pounds per acre. And finally, what I really like to emphasize is that policy in the United States around industrial hemp needs to shift to agriculture. This is an agricultural issue. This is not a criminal justice issue. It needs to move away from the 1930s hysteria into the common era of the 21st century, into common sense policy. And I'd also just entertain any questions that the committee might have, and I appreciate your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? The side has been awfully quiet over here.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming here today and sharing your testimony. And last but not least, we have the department here that would like to share their thoughts, and I'm sure we have some questions for them.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and with me is Jim Kramer, who's the administrator of our Commodity Inspection Division. The agency has provided you some written testimony. Many of the issues that we've identified in the written testimony have come up already in the testimony prior. We're prepared to visit about how the agency might go about administering a program, if that is something you would like to visit about, and available for questions.
Okay, why don't you just, if you could briefly talk about, we have your handout here, and obviously it's done in a half a dozen other states, so certainly be interested to hear how it would be done here, and obviously if it's done in other states, there's probably no reason we can't be doing it here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Kramer, Administrator of the Commodity Inspection Division. I think as we look through this bill and put together some of the testimony, it's not an unfamiliar process for us to work together, setting up rules to handle, administer the law. And we see this one being handled very similarly. We would set up a advisory board and advisory committee, work through the process of setting rules to administer the program. That being said, it's kind of a new ground for us, and we're not sure all what we would end up with, how long the process would take, but we're prepared to do that.
And I do have a question for you. I see your note down here about irrigation, concern about water requirements, and we heard from Senator Nelson that they're interested in this because it could be a dryland crop. I guess if you can share your experience about that, how well, and I'm assuming the yield would be different whether it's an irrigated crop or not. And then it sounds like concerned about it supplanting other higher, I don't know if I want to say higher yield, but higher priced crops. And we just heard that, you know, it's being sold at 80 cents a pound, and actually, I think that's in North Dakota. I don't know what it would go for here. So if you want to talk a little bit about the market elements, I think that would be helpful. And irrigation.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. So the department has spent some time over the last several days looking into this and going back and looking at previous studies that have been done, and that is the reference to the OSU study that is, I think it's 11 years old.
Yeah.
They were, for us as much, just reference to bring to the committee of some of the challenges that could be out there and differences in yields. We have not done an exhaustive search in any way at looking at what yields are between dry land and irrigated farms in any recent time. It was merely put there as reference. And in terms of looking at market and market price, we're learning along with you all about this in terms of it, the new opportunities that are out there for hemp in the marketplace.
Okay. And did you want to comment? I see that you have, as far as the illegal marijuana concerns about that. Did you look into what other states are doing?
Dan Hilburn has done some research. For us, it was a matter of pointing out that there is a nexus with the federal and state law. There could be some challenges with that, and how those need to be worked out, I think, are beyond our current knowledge of what would need to happen.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Other questions? Senator Brzozinski, Senator Boquist.
Yeah. And Lisa, I guess what I just want to follow up on, based on this last one, we do realize that we do have asset forfeiture laws in this state, and that if a farmer was foolish enough to actually try to grow marijuana in the middle of a industrial hemp field, they could, in fact, be sanctioned for that by losing hundreds of thousands of dollars in farm equipment and the other type of apparatus, including their land, if they were caught and convicted. Is that an outcome that is possible?
Chair and members of the committee, I don't know that we're prepared to answer all of the legal potentials that exist out there. And our testimony, basically written in here, is to act as if those issues would be resolved. And then what would we do to act as an agency that would administer the program? So I couldn't answer your question to that. I know that as that for the agency, that we would have to have those questions answered internally, and we would do that probably through the rulemaking process.
Follow up, Senator Brzozinski.
Yeah, and all I just want to say is that, seeing that you made some notation as to the potential of illegal activity, I just assume that you had done the other part of the homework as to what would be the way of, let's say, remedying that that's already built into the our state laws.
Okay. Well, we would certainly look into that. And we would ask you to follow up with that. So I appreciate that you haven't had time to do that yet. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the department here. Again, I'm looking at the Congressional Research Report from the federal government, and it indicates that 14 states have actually passed laws for this. 28 states have entered into passed laws calling for economic and production studies to be done. In addition to that, the organization I don't belong to, that the rest of you do to, which is what the National Conference of State Legislatures, actually adopted a resolution in 2000 asking the federal government to resolve this issue so they could grow the products. And then your organization, Lisa, if you didn't know, the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture heads asked for the same thing. And that was in 2003. I think if we did enough search out there, we'd find that there's plenty of states that have existing laws out there. And technically, for the record, as, I don't know, I guess Vote Hemp or whoever it is here would say, is the law presently allows it to be produced. It's just the DEA has not issued any permits. And there is an act before the Congress right now.
Thank you for that clarification, Senator. It was more of a comment than a question. I appreciate that. Any other questions or comments? Okay.
No.
We're going to move on now because I have two other work sessions up, so you could follow up with the members afterwards. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, is there anybody else that didn't testify that would like to testify on this bill?
Madam Chair.
Senator Brzozinski.
Well, I just want to make sure the committee understands that there are some amendments that I will be proposing that will, in fact, bring it more in line with the other bills that have passed in other states, such as the level of THC and a few other things that have been brought to our attention. The bill that we have before us is one that has been a model that has been used in previous legislatures, and so we're going to refine it based on the experience of North Dakota as well as other states. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Brzezinski. We'll look forward to having you work with our committee staff on that and moving it forward. Okay, with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill. Where are we? We're on Senate Bill 676. I will